I'm Asmodeus, from the Strange and Unusual podcast, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual host. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
This is PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture. We are a geek podcast for geek culture, so are you ready to get your geek on? Sit back, relax, step out of your TARDIS and warm up your chimichangas, because this is PopX Cast.
You are listening to PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture.
Captain's Log Supplemental.
PopX Cast.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Welcome everyone, this is PopX Cast, episode number, holy cow, I can't believe I say this, 57? What?
That's a lot of
shows. Awesome.
That is awesome.
Oh my gosh, we're like at 60 almost. This is crazy. Holy cow. I know. It's crazy. But you know what is even more crazy? That PopX is streaming in the middle of the week on a Wednesday night. What? How does that work? I have
switching it up.
Great Scott, Marty. But actually, if you're true to the PopX brand, you know one thing is for sure, that PopX in the first 12 episodes recorded on Wednesday night.
Ooh.
This is our original.
It's true.
It is true. So we switched to Sundays to help fill in some schedules. But it's good to have everybody here. This is our, as you will say, Memorial Day special. We were set to record this weekend on Memorial Day, but we wanted that time for families. So
and vacay.
Vacays, yes, yes. Lindsay Badger's going out of town for a little bit. I maybe going to a theme park. I have no idea what I'm doing this weekend. So, yes, plans are wide open. But, yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah. How's your week, everybody? What's up, Austin? How's your week? Lindsay, how's your week?
Oh, it's been great, man. It's summer vacation. It's just good to be alive right now, getting some sun and working out.
Are you getting
a lot of food?
You getting some sun?
I'm getting some sun, man.
You're getting brown as a biscuit.
Well,
Lord. You're just getting brown as a biscuit.
Toasty around the edges a little bit.
Toasty.
Lindsay Badger, except for the weekend.
Oh, man. We have got a cram-packed weekend full of activities, so I am looking forward to our trip to Kansas City to see my best internet buddy, Stacy, up in Kansas City.
Nice,
and hang
nice.
Out with her downtown. Just going to show us around and have a good time. The kids are really excited about
it. Sweet. Well, before we get it going off, we want to give a huge shout out to Stacy Bryuka over in the chat room as we speak. Herbie on the curb, yes. Herb Marin. Dude, I haven't seen you in forever, but I live vicariously on your Instagram. So, yes, I see you. I see you in Brooklyn. I know what you're doing up in Brownsville. And
keep
also
posting all that awesome stuff.
I know. And Zachary Blum is hanging out with us from the Blue Man Group fan community. Thanks for joining us.
Hey,
that's awesome. So, guys, welcome. This is PopX, where science fiction meets pop culture. I'm your host, Joe Burke, Central Florida's seasoned comic book nerd and retro enthusiast. We'd like to welcome everyone joining us live in the PopX.live and Geeks.live chat room. Come on and hang out with us and join the conversation at PopXcast.com.
Hey, guys. I'm Austin Burke, the Appalachian geek at heart. And we're having some weather issues, so if my internet's really bad, you guys know why. So if you missed Episode 56, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 review and more, check our official website at PopXcast.com for this and other great shows from PopX.
And, of course, I am Lindsay Badger, your favorite geeky okie. And be sure you head over to Google Play or iTunes after the show and click that subscribe button. Catch up on amazing shows from PopX's archive. And, hey, while you're there, we'd certainly love you to give us a 5-star rating and review.
Sorry, I'm helping out with the branding thing here. So five glowing star reviews. All right, guys, let's head right on into the news. Sit tight, be right back in just a second.
Extra, extra, read all about it. This is PopX News, coming to you live right here on PopXCast.com.
Yes, yes, yes. And I tell you what, leading off the news this week, I know it's Kermit.
I love Kirby.
Have Kermit. Can I do a quick joke right quick? Since it's Kermit. Have you seen Kermit the Frog's X-ray? Have you seen that?
No.
All right, here you go. Hang on, folks. Kermit the Frog. Anyway, so that's all you get. All right, so leading off the top of the news this week, we got Marvel's latest television undertaking is the Inhuman series on ABC. While it hasn't received a full trailer yet, there has been various sightings of the cast and costume on set. Now, a full trailer was shown at the Disney Upfront presentation, and now some images from the trailer have made their way online. Before I go any further, there is actually a leak of the trailer that I saw 1 minute.
What?
And yes, there is a full CGI lockjaw dog, let me tell you.
It's awesome. Yes.
So Twitter user at Age of Myself shared a few things, images pulled from this first footage. The scenes are all kind of bare. Kind of bear a Scott Buck watermark, who is the show's director, of course. So that's interesting. And so they do seem legit, and it is legit. This is the actors. So this trailer is not a fan-made trailer, is what we're trying to say. This is the cream of the crop. And so basically, the first image features the Inhuman royal family around a large table as they share a meal together. Now, the second image shows Black Bolt holding hands with Medusa as they travel down a sleek white staircase with Maximus behind them. Now, the third image appears to be one of the sort of a forest or a cave that features Karnak and Crystal. Hopefully, fans will get to put these images into some sort of context when the full trailer releases. But I can tell you, if you are cunning and you search and you know where to find, there is a leaked trailer, and and all of these scenes that you see here are on there, including one image capture I'm not seeing, Lockjaw. So who's cool. excited for the Inhumans to make their way into the Marvel?
Oh, I'm beyond excited. Here's the thing. The first picture came out, and a lot of people were complaining about the look, and I understand that because sometimes these promotional images come out, especially when they're in a magazine or something, and they just look too – they look too edited. You know what I mean?
Oh,
but
yeah.
Vanity
Fair.
dude, abso-freaking-lutely. Vanity Fair is the worst for that. And even movies that are amazing, they make them look kind of crappy.
Yeah.
So I feel like when we see these guys in action and we see what the show's all about and we see what may or may not be in that leaked trailer, not that I've watched it because, you know, who does that? Nobody does that.
I don't know what you're talking
about. But if you guys want to watch it, it's out there. But I feel like once we see these guys in action, we're going to love it. And I think it looks really cool so far.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, Austin, what's our next one for the week?
All right, so we are talking about Black Lightning, with the first official trailer for Black Lightning being dropped. The question now is, will it be part of the Arrowverse? CW president Mark Pedowitz said that the show would not cross over with other DC programs on the network. During a conference call, Pedowitz stated, "We do not intend to do a five-way crossover. Black Lightning at this point is not part of the Arrowverse. It's odd that Black Lightning won't exist within the same rules of our universe, considering the same producers are making the series on the same network where the others exist." Now, here's my thoughts on this. You ready? They're going to give in because they said the same thing about Supergirl, and then she comes over to the CW. And even if he is on a different Earth, guess what? We have the Flash.
Multiverse.
That's all I'm saying.
So are we talking a five series crossover event?
Dude, that's too much.
Yeah.
That would be pretty cool.
That would be mind blown.
You know what? I would be okay if they decided not to do the five-way crossover and still wove in the characters, you know, on their own.
Yeah. That would be nice. I don't mind that one bit.
Do the continue, you know, keep the fabric going through the whole, you know, weave it in and out.
Well, speaking of keeping the fabric going, Lindsay Badger, what is the next one for the week?
Push it through. All right.
Needle and thread.
This August, you guys, DC is going to be celebrating the 100th birthday of Jack Kirby.
Wow.
With a half dozen one-shots featuring some of his best-known characters, which will include Darkseid, Orion, Omak, the Newsboy Legion, Master Miracle, and more. The projects were announced with no writers or interior artists attached as of yet on DC's All Access. Also, publisher will release a year-long limited series titled The Kamandi Challenge, wherein various creative teams will take over one of Kirby's most beloved characters for an issue at a time. The Kamandi Challenge feature Kirby's face, complete with trademark cigar on the cover, surrounded by Kirby Crackle, the word King, and the number 100. Through the power of his imagination and seemingly endless energy and creativity, Jack Kirby made not just an indelible Kirby Crackled mark on the world of comic books, but he ended up shaping the entirety of pop culture as it exists today, mm-hmm. said the DC publisher Jim Lee. Mm-hmm. The vastness of Jack's imagination and his powers as an artist and storyteller remain unmatched to this day. I sincerely doubt that we'll ever see the likes of Jack the King Kirby ever again.
And Lindsay Badger, just to kind of go along with what you're saying there, and I know these words are coming from Jim Lee, the great artist his artwork's amazing, but if you think about everybody automatically gravitates to Stan Lee because Stan Lee is more of the in public figure when it comes to these characters. But when you get down to it and you start doing your homework and you investigate, there's also co-creator Jack Kirby right beside each and every publication. And the truth be known, Stan Lee was the one that approved the characters. Kirby, on the other hand, came up with the characters. And you would know that if you would go back into PopX's historical archive. I think that it's about time Jack Kirby gets the homage that he needs and represents and finally duly deserves, because the Kirby family for a long time has kind of been thrown under the bus, because no disrespect to Stan Lee, he takes the limelight, he's the cameo king of Marvel, but Kirby truly is the mastermind behind the pencil. Moving on here with the news, we have also, this one's kind of cool, and this one blew me away this week. Tom Hardy. I'm just going to drop it right there. Tom Hardy Venom. Dude. Can you believe this? Dude, this is crazy. Tom Hardy is making the jump from DC Comics to Marvel in a live-action form. The man best known as Bane. from The Dark Knight Rises has been cast as Venom in the upcoming Sony Pictures film. Now, Hardy is in final negotiations to star as Venom, a.k.a. Eddie Brock, in the self-titled film set to release on October the 5th, 2018. Now, the film is a top priority for Sony Pictures, and the studio is eagerly aiming to make the film's 2018 release date. The Hollywood Reporter stated Venom is to usher in a host of movies for Sony's Marvel and Spider-Man-based universe of characters. Sony is rebooting its Marvel-based slate with this summer's Spider-Man Homecoming, and Venom is the key title in this slate. The Venom movie will be directed by Zombieland's Ruben Fleischer, and the plot of the film has been kept secret and quiet up to this point. Mm. So,
look, Joe.
Yeah.
Look, we're gonna put the fact that he's not a part of the MCU aside for just a second. We're gonna focus on this casting. This might be the greatest piece of casting I have heard in years. I mean,
it's a home run.
And the thing is, nobody saw it coming. This came out of nowhere, and not even just good casting, but Ruben Fleischer's a good direct gangster squad aside, because that movie sucked. But Zombieland is great. And he has some great writing credits. So I'm very excited for this movie. And this just took me from, I might be on board to 100%. I'm trusting Sony, and I never thought I would say that. It's amazing.
Oh, gosh.
So my question here is, now with Sony and Marvel coming to an agreement to use Peter Parker's Spider-Man in the MCU, but Sony releasing independently its Venom film, will Venom be able to make his way into the MCU given the agreement between Sony and Marvel? That's a question I want to know.
I hope so. Because, I would love to see it.
Because in the symbiote which inhabits Eddie Brock and used to inhabit Peter Parker, is a huge part of the Marvel universe.
How do they explain that? That's what I'm wondering. How are they going to explain? Because this is look on Venom's chest in that picture that is right there.
It's Spider-Man.
What is that?
That
is a spider.
Yeah, it's a spider.
What are they going to do about that? Like, look, if they do it right, they do it right. But and here's the thing, though, Tom Hardy is very, very particular about his scripts.
Oh yeah,
this is well known through Hollywood. He chooses only what he thinks is going. Because have you ever really seen him in a terrible
Mad Max?
Yes. Nobody would have thought that would work, but he did.
Yeah.
So you never know.
Beautiful movie too. Well, we got one more news segment, and then we got a quick little spiel, and then we're going to go into this week's topic. So, Austin.
All right. Well, let's do it. This is pretty cool news too, guys. So, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, something we talked about last week in depth, has reached a significant milestone by crossing the $300 million mark at the domestic box office. The original Guardians earned
$300 million.
So the original earned $333 million domestic in its entire theatrical run. Of course, it had less competition. Volume 2 is closing in on that total after just 3 weeks. The film is performing well worldwide, bringing its global total to $735 million. Volume 2 has pushed the Marvel Cinematic Universe's lifetime box office total over the $11 billion.
Billion dollar mark.
Is that not incredible? That's, $11 billion.
That is far more money than I'm actually willing to. I don't know what
Wow.
I can't comprehend that much money.
That's freaking build your own world money. Mm-hmm. That's like crazy. That's like, oh my gosh.
That's too.
Well, really quick, guys, before we go into the news segment this week, there is two things that came out this week or this past week that is really kind of a hot topic. And, Mike, you don't have to worry about graphics on these, but I'm just going to kind of ramble about these really quickly if I can. The first one is actually the release of, and I have to show you the box art because the box art is just simply stunning, Logan. Oh. And this is the actual 4K edition, which does include the black and white film noir release of
which is
Logan.
Amazing,
and it's pretty awesome. And I have to say, I just got it yesterday, and I haven't watched the color version, but I did sit down and watch the black and white version, and it felt like Sin City to me. It was insanely gorgeous and beautiful. So this right here, I would have to say, this whole box set, because there's four discs in here. There's a disc of just special features all alone, and so there's behind the scenes and all that. Easily a great eBay buy. And this week only, if you get it on Amazon. If you get it on Amazon and you have Prime, you get free shipping, but $24.96. This is a $40 disc set. $24.96. So definitely, if you plan on getting Logan in your repertoire, get it this week before this week ends, Memorial Day weekend only. Now, secondly, I'm going to be talking about Injustice 2. Now, I have been playing Injustice 2 like crazy, and I actually have a quick clip here. I'm going to play it for you through you guys that are listening. Will be able to see this pretty cool, but this is a really neat little clip that's going to show you pretty much Swamp Thing as he's basically, I've leveled him up. One thing I like about this that actually brings home the whole game is you get to level up your character. Yes, he starts out basic, but if you play through it and you play through the multiverse, then you actually get to see Swamp Thing evolve into this mecha of a beast, and it's really amazing. And so for me, they have taken what has worked with Injustice Part 1 and actually capitalized on it and made it something truly phenomenal with Injustice 2.
Yes,
it's gorgeous. It's a beautiful game. And but honestly, I beat the story mode. The story mode is brilliant. If you're a fan of Marvel and DC, of DC Comics and their storylines, you will love the storyline in this. And not only do you get to see the storyline, you get to play the storyline and make decisions throughout the thing that will impact the ending of the game. And so for me, if I was going to rate this game, I have to say, now this is the Deluxe 10 edition. This is the High Roller edition, because that's the only way I roll. On the back here, you can see Superman as well. But so for me, I would have to say this is easily a 9.5 on the video game scale. Thank if you. I was rating this out of 10. The best comic book adaptation video game I have ever played, period. Wow. It is amazing. So definitely that is my review on Injustice and on Logan. So hopefully you guys enjoy that. If you want to drop me a line or drop me a comment below in the comments section, I would love to hear your feedback on what you think about Logan, the black and white version, and Injustice 2. If you have Injustice 2, let us know, okay? So
you're making me want to go get Injustice now.
it's pretty awesome. And getting Injustice is just justice. And I'm also going to leave it at
justice.
It's just justice.
Bring it to justice.
Bring it to justice. All right, guys. We got 40 minutes to get through Adam Warlock and Celestials. You think we can do this?
We're going to try. And even if it goes longer, we'll make it happen.
All right. Now, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do something totally out of the ordinary on this show. I'm going to drop the spoiler alert. Because things that we're going to be talking about in here is definitely going to dramatically impact Infinity War, and it's going to be things that Easter eggs that were in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. So if you haven't seen the movie, I'm just saying, we're going to drop the spoiler alert, okay? Just to keep the base and to keep the calm, okay? So we'll be right back.
Danger. You are about to enter a Pop-X spoiler alert. Beyond this point, there is no return. You have been warned.
All right, you have been warned. So here we go, ladies and gentlemen. First and foremost, we're going to be talking about Mr. Adam Warlock. So Adam Warlock was created by Stan Lee and guess who? Jack Kirby. As him. That's what he was known as in the comic books. Him. Just not, yeah. And first appeared in Fantastic Four number 66. Now, it is, however, Jim Starlin that has made the character into what he is today, writing and developing him from the 70s right into the 2000s. Now, we're going to give you a quick little origin story of Adam Warlock, and then we're going to dive into some of his more in-depth encounters, if you will. So originally, Adam Warlock was simply known as him. He is an artificial being created by the hand of several mad scientists who form an elite scientific cadre, if you will, the Enclave, and that's what they're called, and whom based their work in a scientific complex called the Beehive. The Beehive? Really? What about a hive or the comb, like the honeycomb or something? Anyway, so Adam Warlock was created. It's like, anyway, that was nasty.
Sorry.
Adam Warlock was created by these men, and so he was formed in and born from a cocoon. Now, does that cocoon look familiar?
That looks familiar to me. That looks familiar. Hint, hint, wink, wink, Easter egg, nod, nod.
Okay. So the goal of his creators was to create the perfect human for their own gain. The Fantastic Four would eventually investigate the creation of him. The Enclave escaped when the complex was set to self-destruct. After him was born, he immediately sensed, that sounds like I'm talking in third person, he immediately sensed how corrupt his creators were and promptly abandoned them to leave for space for the purpose of gathering his thoughts. Now, however, he doesn't get far as he is caught in an asteroid shower and is saved by the being known as Uatu. Remember me saying that name, Uatu?
Uatu.
Oh, yeah.
Now let's see. Let's test your knowledge from 2 weeks ago. Who is Uatu in Guardians of the Galaxy?
Maybe Stan Lee.
Stan Lee, the Watcher.
He's the Watcher.
Who sends him back to Earth. Years later, the Enclave attempt to create another perfect artificial human, resulting in the birth of Kismet. Now, while performing his duties and enduring his trials upon Earth, him discovers the existence of the Asgardian goddess Sif. Now, and he decides he wants her to be his mate. This, of course, inspires the wrath of Thor, the Asgardian god of thunder. Now, him and Thor battle, and when, after a short time, it becomes apparent that he cannot beat Thor, the thunder god, him passively escapes the confrontation, altercation, by creating a cocoon around himself. Now, him later met the person that changed his life, the High Evolutionary, who gave him his now known name, Adam, for being the first of his kind. Get it? Adam and Eve? Mm-hmm. Warlock.
Yeah.
Warlock, because men would fear his power. So Adam, the first of his kind, Warlock, a man whose power is to be feared, and gave him his soul, Jim, that would apparently change his life. Now, did you hear what I just said there? gave him his soul gem. What is the only what is the only gem we need in the Marvel universe right now?
The soul gem.
My heart's so happy right now.
All right. Now, Austin, tell us a little bit about Thanos and death.
So we're talking Thanos and death, something that is very apparent in the Marvel universe right now. So sometime later, Thanos entered Adam's life once again as an ally to Warlock, whose intention was to steal the Soul Gem's power from Adam. After doing so, Thanos combined the Soul Gem with the other Infinity Gems to create a cosmic weapon known to destroy stars. Thanos deeply aligned with death, planning on smiting out every star in the universe as a gift for Mistress Death, because as we know, Thanos loves Death, who is a woman in the Marvel comics.
Yes.
After having discovered Thanos' intentions, Gamora was deeply wounded by him. The wounded Gamora fled in a ship to warn Warlock, but was brought down by Thanos' nemesis, Drax the Destroyer. Meanwhile, Warlock's ally, Pip the Troll, who had become separated from Warlock, found himself at Thanos' door, and assuming Thanos to still be an ally, boarded the ship in the hopes that Thanos would help him find Warlock. Thanos grabbed Pip and destroyed his mind. So this Thanos guy. Yeah. He's a pretty bad dude.
He's a bad guy.
He's a galactic destroyer.
He's a bad neighbor. So before dying, Gamora warned Warlock about Thanos' intentions. Adam traveled to Earth to gather the help of heroes such as Captain Marvel, Moondragon, and others. The Avengers and Moondragon attacked Thanos' fleet so they could enter Sanctuary 1, Thanos' vessel. Marvel and Adam engaged in battle with Thanos after discovering Pip the Troll's mindless body on the ship. Warlock took Pip's soul into his gym before engaging Thanos in battle, followed by Thor and Iron Man. Marvel was able to destroy the weapons launcher, but Warlock eventually died at Thanos' hands. Thor was able to hold off Thanos long enough for Iron Man to destroy the main weaponry itself. Thanos, now aggravated, he's like, oh, about the miserable circumstances, defeats the remaining heroes. So the scenery is being intervened by Lord Chaos and Master Order, who telepathically send a message to Spider-Man and Ben Grimm to draw them to them. After Spider-Man and Ben Grimm arrive, Spider-Man accidentally made contact, of course, with the Soul Gem, which released the spirit of Adam Warlock, who turned Thanos into stone and with his powers before returning to the Soul Gem. So months after Thanos' defeat, Ben Grimm met a woman called who was also made by the Enclave to be equivalent to him. It was later revealed that him and her are one and the same entities with just different aspects, and that they have been living for over centuries, which leaves to follow that Adam's so-called creation was just another state of cocoon, and that he had been found by the Enclave, not created by them. So we're switching things up now. Her is in the search of him, accompanied by Ben Grimm, Moondragon, Starhawk, guys, and the High Evolutionary, who leads her to Adam's grave, where his body resides, yet his spirit is gone.
Now, my God, that was a lot of pronouns.
Now, let me reveal something to you guys. Now, her was actually in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Do you know who her was?
Was she gold?
She had gold eyes.
Aisha. Is that her name?
So what happened was James Gunn changed her name to Aisha, but technically Aisha is her.
Wow.
And if you notice, she was the one that created Adam Warlock.
Oh, my goodness. James Gunn.
That's right. She was in the search of – yes, okay.
Oh, you guys – are you just
– it's all together now. It's all cooking.
We're here to learn too, okay?
So here's what's happened. Let me – before Lindsay opens up a can of Infinity Gauntlet whoop-butt. So basically, the Soul Gem is empowered by Adam Warlock. Adam was the first of his kind. His name is Adam because he's the first, and then Warlock because everybody fears him. But basically, he embodies the Soul Gem, and it's all coming together in Guardians of the Galaxy. I think Volume 3, everything that we're covering here in Volume 3, and when we see Guardians of the Galaxy, when that time comes, we're all going to be like, oh my God, Pop X. I love you, Pop X.
Mm-hmm. They're gonna be like, "Thank you." I'm gonna come back and rewatch this episode before three. Yes, for sure.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, so a return and the Infinity Gauntlet. Several years pass, and the Silver Surfer was witness to the resurrection of Thanos by Mistress Death, who felt that she needed a champion once again. Thanos then made it to duty to collect all the Infinity Gems, which has been taken by the Elders of the Universe and the In-Betweener. With the Infinity Gems collected, Thanos forged them into a glove and bestowed it with the name the Infinity Gauntlet. This gauntlet allows Thanos to exceed the power he once wielded with the Cosmic Cube. Through Thanos' resurrection, Adam felt the anomaly, and he had to return to the physical plane we call Earth with Pip and Gamora at his side, each of them inhabiting the body of a recently deceased human that they then reshaped and revived themselves within. Thanos, now wielder of the cosmos's mightiest weapon, erases half of the population of the universe. Let's say that again. Half of the population of the universe is erased
with
the Infinity Gauntlet. And he did it just simply to honor Death. Thanos goes on a crusade battling the cosmos's mightiest. Oh my lord, look what you have.
Did somebody say gauntlet?
That's amazing. You actually have it.
He does have it. All right. Thanos goes on a crusade battling Cosmos' mightiest. Galactus, Living Tribunal, Eternity, etc., along with Mistress Death as his witness. Adam led a group of Earth's superheroes who were almost able to defeat the overconfident Thanos. Mm-hmm. If you had a gauntlet that size, you'd be overconfident.
That's right, she said.
All right.
But they stay at par as the Infinity Gauntlet switches its owners to a space pirate known as Nebula, a new name we've heard before, who claims to be Thanos' granddaughter. After reversing the mistake Thanos has made, Nebula lost the wondrous gauntlet to Adam Warlock, who, with the Infinity Gauntlet's power, became God.
Wow.
Adam's possession of the gauntlet was the end of the saga. However, his godhood isn't for long. The entity known as the Living Tribunal declared Adam as unworthy, for he was only artificial. Though during the following events, it was shown that he is not. And in his misguided fortune, he divided the gems between his closest companions, Pip, Gamora, Drax the Destroyer, Moondragon, and Thanos, who together with Adam built the lineup of the Infinity Watch, though Thanos is never really an active member of this little crew that they built.
Squad.
The temporary possession of the Infinity Gauntlet, or more the gems that being in his hands, brought forth more of a partial mental instability in Warlock. To clear his mind from all of these countering thoughts between good and evil, he had to free himself from all things good and bad and become a being of pure logic. Wow. The mere thoughts of Adam became a reality, and his evil half became a reincarnation of Magus, while his good half became the goddess. Two of them later tried to control the universe together.
So, jeez. You were talking about the Living Tribunal. Does that sound familiar? Anybody? Doctor Strange?
Oh, yeah.
Strange mentioned that.
Yes. So, the Living Tribunal is an entity that is definitely, as already woven itself into the fabric of Marvel Universe. Now, it's just beginning to weave itself into the MCU as well. And really great read there, Lindsay Badger. Sorry I had to get off camera. I had to go get my Infinity Gauntlet. Just, okay. Just to make sure. I'm just going to hold it right here because my fist is actually that big. So,
I'm concerned about your mental stability right now, though.
Well,
not with that thing in its position.
You don't want to hold on to that too long. It'll mess with you.
I do. This is it. This assaults you. Anyway,
it'll turn you into a Vulcan. Beware.
What if I touch them all? No, I'm just messing with you. So now that we're leading up into the Infinity War, and then we're going to get into Adam's powers and abilities. Now this is if you're looking forward to next year's big blockbuster with Avengers Infinity War, there's going to be some huge spoiler drops in here, so get ready for it. Now, the first of his counterparts to forge a plan is the evil Magus, as Lindsay was telling us about earlier. He travels throughout several dimensions and collects 5 cosmic cubes. With his power, he begins his preparations to create a new universe in his own image, an image of evil. He creates evil doppelgangers of all the Earth's heroes and sets an elaborate plan into motion, turning the good against the good. It is Thanos who approaches Adam and the Infinity Watch for assistance in stopping Magus. Through the manipulation of all the people involved, the Magus is able to obtain the Infinity Gauntlet, recently repowered by the Living Tribunal and Eternity. Now, Eternity, where have we heard that before? Remember when Ego touched Star-Lord's head, his eyes lit up, and he just said, "Eternity."
The stars.
Now, that was awesome.
He now has the godhood that Thanos and Warlock once had. But Thanos and Warlock knew all along that they were being watched and manipulated and tricked the Magus. He did not actually obtain the full power of the Infinity Gauntlet, for the Reality Gem was a fake. Now, Adam's experience with the gauntlet allowed him to overpower the Magus, and with the help of the Eternity and Infinity, the Magus was cast into the Soul Gem and defeated. Now, Adam's encounter with Magus left him in a kind of a catatonic state for some time, having taken a high psychic toll on his mind. Gamora stayed alongside him while he was recuperated on Monster Island. He was awakened by Eternity, much to Adam's displeasure. Adam had wished to stay catatonic and to be done with saving the universe and adventuring. His days were over with that. But Eternity forced him to acknowledge his past and future selves and become one with them in order to stop a future threat to the universe. Eternity provided Warlock with a crystal orb that could be used to contact and seek assistance from Eternity. Now, Eternity warned Adam of many coming threats, not only to him, but Eternity himself. One of the first Adam to meet was a being without a soul. His name was Count Abyss. He wished to obtain the Soul Gem for himself at any cost. Immediately after Count's first attack, Adam and Infinity Watch discovered a man washed ashore named Maxim, who instantly attacked Adam upon seeing him. Adam persuaded him to calm him down and attempted to help him regain his memories despite Gamora having seen him and killing him, Adam, in the vision from the time gem. So, there's a lot going on here, but to break it down, Magus regains power. He thinks he's better than Thanos and Adam Warlock. He tries to rise to power. He contacts Eternity and Infinity and tries to persuade both of those to be able to overcome the universe. And having seen this through the portals and the flails of time, Eternity awoken Adam Warlock from his sleep to be able to overcome this Infinity Crisis. So there you have it. Now, I think Austin is going to give us some powers and abilities of Mr. Adam Warlock.
Now, if you guys haven't figured it out yet, there are a lot of these. Here we go. So Adam Warlock possesses a number of superhuman properties and powers derived from his artificially determined genetic structure. His bone and muscle tissue is denser than humans, endowing him with superhuman strength and resilience. Adam Warlock has various superhuman abilities such as enhanced strength, stamina, and agility. During his times as him, Adam was capable of manhandling even Thor. His cells are constantly absorbing and storing cosmic energy. He can manipulate cosmic energy for a variety of effects, including augmenting his physical abilities and projecting energy. Once he turned into Adam Warlock and was granted the Soul Gem, he no longer relied on his own powers and embraced the gem's power. So he was literally using an Infinity Stone for his powers. Like, that's incredible.
Like Vision. Yep.
Yeah, exactly like Vision. So Eternity warned Adam of many coming threats. Adam's powers are the summary of the events of his past history. The Soul Gem, for example, acted on its own sometimes in manners Adam was to hesitate. So it was capable of stripping enemies of their souls and passing judgment upon them. Passively, Adam was able to enhance his own powers and his astral projection to not only him but to Eternity himself. One of the first Adam was to meet was Count Abyss. Count Abyss was one of the first ones that Adam was able to meet. He wished to obtain the Soul Gem for himself at any cost. Immediately after the Count's first attack, Adam and the Infinity Watch discovered a man washed ashore named Maxim. Right? Maxim?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Maxim, who instantly attacked Adam upon seeing him. Adam persuaded him to calm down and attempted to help him regain his memories, despite Gamora having seen him killing Adam in a vision from the Time Gem. After being freed from the Soul Gem, he appeared to possess enhanced strength, cosmic awareness, and physical manipulation, such as empowering entities with more strength or basic attributes. Adam Warlock is also capable of creating a regenerative cocoon in order to prevent death, to recover and heal himself, or to simply rest after an outgoing event. So this guy can basically do it all. Is that what we're saying?
Very bizarre, his nature. I mean, it's really...
Oh, my goodness. So he is able to spin a cocoon around him at will in a matter of seconds. He did so infrequently during his short life, usually to protect himself from mortal harm. And usually he would emerge from the cocoon at a further level of physical or mental maturity. While in his evolutionary cocoon, Adam Warlock evolves to deep necessary powers or abilities. So if these powers come to the Marvel Universe,
Wow. Are
we saying that this guy could be the most powerful one other than Thanos with the Infinity Gauntlet?
I think, honestly, other than Galactus, he would be the most powerful being that there is. And it's really interesting, Austin. You know, I know James Gunn. You remember the end credit for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1 where, you know, they're at the collector's thing and you see that cocoon in that glass case?
Gunn
kind of dismissed that as kind of a – but if you think about it, and having read this and the understanding that he has different phases and metamorphosizes different ways, could that have been an early stage cocoon of a different Adam Warlock from a different era, and the one we saw at the end of Volume 2 is a different version of him?
It makes complete sense, and I wouldn't put it past James Gunn to do something along those lines.
He's just that nerdy.
The sweat is literally pouring off of him. It's amazing. So as a result of the deaths of billions of living beings during the Annihilation Wave, which is the Marvel story arc, billions of souls contacted Adam. This emotional metaphysical trauma nearly drove Adam completely insane. Warlock spun a cocoon in order to recover from the trauma. Warlock's early awakening from his most recent cocoon has meant a loss of control of his abilities. He now appears to have seizures when overexerting himself. His powers have also essentially changed as well. He now calls himself a quantum mage and is able to control massive amounts of mystical and metaphysical energies as opposed to cosmic energies. It was explicitly asserted that he developed those abilities to counteract the billions of souls contacting Adam. So kind of imagine Professor X and the X-Men when hearing all of these people's thoughts. That's what I picture when we're talking about Adam Warlock hearing these billions of souls crying, which is more than Professor X, obviously. But Adam Warlock can now cast spells with a variety of effects, including traveling faster than light.
Okay. Crazy.
And detecting wormholes and other special anomalies. Nova's World Mind recently stated that it could not quantify or calculate Adam Magnus' power level, saying it was significantly higher than Nova's. Guys, this is a character that some would consider him to be OP, overpowered, but
I think James Gunn can do a lot with this guy, man.
So and if he basically what bit, you're saying is that Warlock, you have, let's say we have a checklist on a clipboard of okay. all the lists of possible superpowers that anything could have ever in the life of everything.
Yeah. Yep.
And there's a select all button at the top, and then you just write that's Adam out. On the top of
that's
it.
That's Adam Warlock.
And then we're done.
Yeah. Wow.
That is insane.
That's incredible.
There's a lot. There's a lot going on there with Adam Warlock. I mean, his character can seriously be taken to so many different heights and levels. In not only in the Guardians of the Galaxy, but I mean, if he wields this in Infinity War or Avengers Part 2, it's game over for Thanos.
Joe, question for you.
Yeah.
So Thanos with the Infinity Gauntlet versus Adam Warlock at the height of his powers, who wins?
Adam Warlock every time.
Oh, yeah.
Because Adam Warlock embodies cosmic energy. Not only does he embody it, but he channels it. Thanos can't
That's
do that.
That's incredible.
Thanos needs a gauntlet.
That's incredible.
His power.
That's true. That's very true. Dude, I mean, that just tells you guys how powerful this guy is.
Wow. All right, Lindsay Badger, you are going to introduce us to the world of Celestials. Now, you guys saw Celestials in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 with
Ego. The gold people. They're the gold people.
Well, no. Celestials
are... No, they're not.
No. Different,
the
different
gods.
People. These are the gods.
Yes, I am. See? Yes. These are the bigger people.
Celestials. Like the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, Ego the Living Planet, which is Star-Lord's father, considered himself a Celestial. In Volume 1, when they actually go into nowhere, they're actually
nowhere.
The head
That's
of a giant
thinking.
Dead Celestial. So these awesome. Beings are 2,000 feet. Tall.
They're huge.
So Lindsay Badger, take it away.
Huge.
All right. So Celestials origins. The Celestials are a Marvel comic book species created by Jack Kirby. First appearing in The Eternals number 2, released in 1976. The Celestials first appear in The Eternals number 2, and as a concept, were created by Jack Kirby. Wait, that's the same thing. Okay, we're going to skip that.
Sorry about that.
I was like, I feel like I'm saying the same thing here. It's okay. They bear some resemblance to Erich von Däniken's ideas of giant space gods whose tampering with humanity lead to technological advancement.
Cool.
The origin of the Celestials have never really fully been explained, but there are many theories as to how they came to be. One theory holds that they might be survivors of a previous universe. Others state that they were created or in some way connected to eternity. And another one states that they were created by and serve an entity called the Fulcrum and help it maintain cosmic balance. Whatever their origin may be, one thing is for certain. They are a race of scientists and engineers who have taken upon themselves to shepherd the development of a younger, lesser races, such as the Skrulls, though their reason for doing so is unknown. One theory suggested that they seek to create the next eternity.
Wow.
Yeah, and before we continue on, if you remember, there is a quick scene in Guardians of the Galaxy where one of these giant beings who is gold, he's got a giant, I think it's a staff that he's holding in his hand. You can see him in the background, and he's
leveling a planet.
Man. He's crazy, dude. Yeah, and so we're diving deep here tonight. Now, another theory suggests that doing so somehow serves the Fulcrum and – in turn, the balance between order and chaos. When the universe was still young, their race was never known to participate in wars, though they sometimes intervened whenever the probability of their experiments being ruined were too high for comfort for them. But that all changed when they made first contact with the Watchers, whose views on the controversial subject of older races interfering with the natural development of younger races clashed directly with those of the Celestials. It was their differences of opinion ultimately that ignited a war between two races. Unfortunately, the oath of the non-interference taken by the Watchers made it forever impossible to stop the Celestials, at least in a direct manner. So the Watchers, Stan Lee, if you will, the Watchers, the big guys who wear the big, got the big heads and all that, and they just sit there with their arms crossed. they take a vow of celibacy in interacting with other races and the other races' development. So they just literally the name of them they watch from a distance.
Mm-hmm.
Now Thor witnessed the birth of a new celestial in the midst of the Black Galaxy, and that's a bioverse that was made of living matter. Other celestials assembled its armor when with Hercules captured in its head. Then Stellaris, who hated the Celestials, rammed it at an enormous speed, sparking off a huge explosion which expanded to reach the edges of the Black Galaxy, then contracted, focusing all of the power of the Black Galaxy into the new Celestial, which then it became alive. It is not known if all Celestials are born this way, but this was captured in one of the early Thor things. Very interesting reads.
That's incredible. First of all, I like the underlying tones of the race battles, too. It's like, oh, we don't like this race, so we're going to do this, and yeah. The big wars. So much thought goes into this, and you see a comic book, and you're like, oh, yeah, somebody wrote a comic. No. These guys are building universes. These guys are building characters.
I've already asked myself probably five times, what were they smoking when they thought of it? So
how do these brains – I could never do anything like this, man.
In the minds of a good Mr. Jack Kirby, a really good Cuban cigar.
Yes.
You know that guy had so many amazing Cuban cigars.
I think there's something else laced in that cigar.
Well, maybe a little bit.
It doesn't matter.
All right, guys. So we're moving on now. We are talking the First Host. So the First Host of Celestials came to Earth about 1 million years ago to do genetic tests and experiments with the Earth's most intelligent life form, human beings. Well, that's debatable.
I don't know about that.
Depends on which one you're talking to.
I mean, there's Miley Cyrus, so I just dropped
that. Yeah. It depends on who was in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. So after many tests and experiments, the Celestials created two subspecies of humans, the Eternals and the Deviants. However, their manipulation of human DNA would give humans the potential to gain superhuman powers and also allow them to give birth to mutants thanks to the insertion of the X gene. The second host of Celestials came to Earth at about 18,000 BC to check upon the progress of the first host visit. After finding the directions of Deviants counterproductive, and in the response to Deviants firing on their ship, the Celestials decided to destroy Lemuria, the Deviants' kingdom. The combination of explosions and eruptions sank Lemuria, Atlantis, pretty cool, and other similar civilizations into the ocean. This disaster became known as the Great Cataclysm. That is awesome. Mm-hmm. It was during this time that Tiamat, the communicator, a.k.a. the Dreaming Celestial, was framed by a cable of Celestials led by Arishem, the Judge, who was jealous of the Dreaming Celestial's intimate connection to the One Above All. Ooh, the One Above All. We are name-dropping hardcore
I'm
right now, Joe.
I'm telling you, man.
After a long battle with the treacherous traitors, the Dreaming Celestial was sealed away inside the Diablo Mountains for a crime he never committed. Just as Arishem had hoped he would.
It was the one-armed man.
This is insane. So the third host of Celestials came to Earth around the 10th century. The Incas, who worshipped the Celestials, built a city of space gods high in the Andes Mountains. The third host occupied this city as their main base on this visit. The Council of Godheads of Earth confronted the third host with the Eternal Ajax speaking for the Celestials. A pact of non-interference with humanity was agreed upon by the Celestials, Earth's Godheads, the Eternals, and the Deviants until the arrival of the Fourth Host.
Now, the reason why I didn't say anything about the Fourth Host ushered in the evolution of technology, which is now we would technically be living in the Fourth Hosts of Celestials in the Marvel Universe.
Wow.
My gosh.
This is knowledge.
Dropping deep, baby. Dropping deep.
So much knowledge.
My brain is numb. But I love it. It feels so good.
I love it. It feels good.
All right, you guys. We're going to introduce the Fantastic Four now.
Yeah.
The Celestials encountered the Fantastic Four, the Fantastic Force, Christoph Vernard, and Scott Lang a few years later during a crisis that almost saw an end to the millennia-long war between the Celestials and the Watchers, who were saved at the last second by the Invisible Woman after she managed to cut Exitar, the exterminator, off from the physical plane by using her connection to hyperspace to destroy the link between his true form and his colossal armor.
Mm.
Nazar the Calculator and Ashima the Listener later returned to Earth to force Franklin Richards into choosing which reality, Earth 616 or the Heroes Reborn universe, would live and which would die. Their intentions were also to take Franklin with them and train him into the proper use of his cosmic power, a power they wished to manipulate for their own personal reasons. However, Ashima's newfound love for humanity turned her away from this cause and led her to store the Heroes Reborn universe inside her own shell.
Wow.
Which the other Celestials eventually gathered up and began studying, hinting at the possibility of a second accession. Of course, the Celestials have multiple story arcs across many Earths in the Marvel Universe and many encounters with Apocalypse himself.
Yes, Apocalypse is a huge part of the Celestials because he's one of those beings that's been around for quite some time in the Marvel Universe.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
So you think about, X-Men Apocalypse. Mm-hmm. You know, you think about the whole X-Men universe, and he was the first, what? Mutant.
Imagine how good that movie could have been if they could have referenced things like these. Yeah, like Celestial. This is these connections. Wow.
So the Celestials actually there's many of them, many forms, and there's many confrontations between Celestials and the Watchers. I think it's the one that's got the in the Guardians of the Galaxy, one's got the three dots going down the front of his face on the armor. That's the one that we see in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1. I don't know which one is which because it doesn't really mention or name drop him. But I think it's really interesting how they have been here so long and there's so much going on. As I'm getting ready to wrap up another great Origin Stories episode here on PopX. And hopefully we haven't bored you guys to tears and stuff like that. But there's a lot of good, deep information here.
I mean, this is cool.
Especially when you get into Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 and upcoming Marvel Universe films, this is kind of key information that you're going to need to know about, especially going forward. So powers and abilities of a Celestial. What is it? What does it look like? So standing well over 2,000 feet tall, each Celestial possesses godlike powers beyond imagination, capable of manipulating power, matter, and energy on an immeasurable scale. The Celestials have shown the ability to move planets at will, lay waste to entire worlds that they deem unfit for survival, destroy artifacts that are thought to be indestructible, such as the Asgardian Destroyer armor, and even contain and destroy entire universes.
Okay.
Wow.
Cool.
So when the Sky Fathers of Earth, I love that name, the Sky Fathers of Earth.
Difficulty.
Yeah. So when the Sky Fathers of Earth's dimensions, Odin, Zeus, and Vishnu combined their energies into a single attack powerful enough to reduce an entire galaxy to nothing less than and attacked the Celestial leader known as Arishem, the Judge, the combined might of the Sky Fathers failed to even phase Arishem in the slightest. Didn't even phase him. Arishem the Judge responded by threatening to permanently seal off the dimension links to Asgard, Olympus, and Nirvana, along with the rest of the realms belonging to the other godheads, which frightened the Sky Fathers to the point that they went down on their own knees and acknowledged their inferiority to the all-powerful Celestial leader. They bowed before their maker. Despite their great power, it is possible to injure a Celestial, and we have quote-unquote injure a Celestial. Yeah. One such instance was when the 2,000 feet tall Odin, while wearing the Asgardian Destroyer armor, infused with the souls of all the Asgardians except for Thor, wielding the Odin sword, managed to cut off Nazar's arm. Although Celestial regenerated the arm instantly, it was just like he cut it and boom, next second it was there. Tiamat, the Dreaming Celestial, has gone as far as stating that it is impossible to truly kill a Celestial. However, a Celestial can be imprisoned by its fellow Celestials. Which brings another question. Is Ego the living planet really dead? Or is it just a conscious entity floating in?
Is nowhere really dead?
You never know.
Never know.
You never know.
So Nathaniel Richards suspected that the source of the Celestial's power were from hyperspace. This theory would prove how Invisible Woman was able to crack a hole in the exterior of the Exterminator's armor and cut off his link to the physical realm, destroying the immersed armor in the process. Now, the Celestials are also capable of communicating with their counterparts from every reality and timeline in existence, no matter what point they are in, how far they are away, inhabiting while communicating. So it doesn't matter if you are light years away on the other end of another universe that it would take a lifetime or eternity to get to, they can communicate in just a second with each other. And so this includes past, present, and future, present to future, and vice versa. So not only can they communicate to themselves in the future or their friends in the future, they can communicate to themselves in the past. There is no timeline. It is a semi-communicating circle where they go above into future and they go below into past. It's insane.
Wow.
That is a mind screw right there. That's just like, what? That's a lot of – now, Jack Kirby. How in the heck, Jack Kirby?
This guy.
I'm telling you, those are some really special cigars he's smoking there.
If you don't respect this guy's brain after tonight's episode, what's wrong with you, man? Because he is a genius. Whether it was intentional or not, he's a genius.
He's
man.
A comic book god. But it down
absolutely.
To
absolutely. He's a celestial.
So that concludes everybody. He is a celestial. He made his own self a celestial. You even made Stan Lee a celestial. But
that's true.
So, guys, we hope you enjoyed this week's origin stories. We dropped in a plethora of information for you guys, especially on Adam Warlock. And now, listen, guys, we only skimmed the surface. We gave you just basic origin stories. We didn't even include all their many multiverse counterparts and multiverse story arcs that are just gone. There, in the Celestials alone, there's over 20 story arcs in the multiverse. Mm-hmm.
Go buy comics.
We didn't even have time to include all of that.
Yes.
So, all right, guys, we're going to wrap it up here on PopX. As always, if you see something exciting on the shelves or at your local comic book shop and in the theater and around geek culture in general, let us know on social media with our hashtag YoPopX. If you use this hashtag, we could use your post on a future episode of PopX Live. So hashtag YoPopX.
Yeah. Also, we are part of an amazing network called the Gonna Geek Network. For all things even more geeky, head over to GonnaGeek.com and check out some amazing podcasts from our home network.
Be sure to follow us on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, Twitter, and Pinterest, all at PopXCast. We'd love to hear from our listeners and send comments and suggestions to PopXCast@gmail.com. Also, for future and past shows, make sure to check out our official website, www.popxcast.com.
I am Austin Burke on YouTube, where I do reviews and reactions, and at the Burkinator on the Twits and the Instagrams. Just search and find me on the internet. I'll be there somewhere.
And you can find me, Lindsay Badger, at LR Badger, all over the interwebs.
And I am Joe Burke at Joseph Burke Arts. No pun intended.
Oh, man, look at that. Those are gorgeous.
So you can find me on at Joseph Burke Arts on the internet. And, of course, hats off to my amazing team, PopX. If it wasn't for these individuals sitting in these chairs, Mike, you can't see because he's kind of like the guy that works behind the scenes backstage. But hats off to Lindsay Badger for throwing down some amazing – just you put this out there on so many forums and platforms. And thank you so much for sharing the love. Austin Burke joining us in thunderstorm-driven Kentucky tonight.
I'm here, man.
And
I'm here.
Even though my internet almost crapped out on me, I'm glad the storm is gone.
We made it through
the Florida storms. And for Mike Eppolito, all the way up in Atlanta, Georgia. Mike, thank you so much for the graphic love. We really
look
do.
At him.
Oh, yes.
Oh, that is.
I love
great
it.
Movie.
Great movie.
I love that movie.
Yes. I need to watch that again. It's been a long time.
It's so good.
Yeah,
it's a good one.
In case I don't see you, good afternoon. And so... When we returned, we will be discussing the Wonder Woman movie review and more. Now, listen, guys, we're going to do something a little different with this. We're going to do something a little different with Wonder Woman. We are actually going to do an Wonder Woman origin story. Cool. And then go right on into the movie review.
Oh, I love that.
I dig it.
So,
that's awesome.
So it's a twofer. It's a two-in-one episode. So it's going to be really cool. And we're going to be able to share some awesome stuff. We're really excited. But from all of us here at PopXcast, thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading. Have an amazing Memorial Day weekend, 2017. Mm-hmm. Go spend some time with your family. Put a steak on a grill. Put a burger on the grill. And just, you know what? Remember the ones that you love. And remember our amazing veterans who made so much possible for us to live in a country where we are just get to be nerdy and geeky all the time. That's what Memorial Day is all about. So from all of us here, thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading. And you know what? We'll see you next time right here on PopXcast.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
From everyone at PopXcast, thanks for listening. Be sure to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes and subscribe for more great content. Drop us an email, popxcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook and YouTube, all at PopXcast. Get your geek on.